It begins with family values.
The family is the basic building block of Canadian society, and supporting it is not only a job government can do, but it must do.
So it's like he's saying to middle-class families, take a number and come back in 5 years and we'll see what we can do for you.
Why doesn't he take some action now to help families such as we're proposing?
In our very first budget, we helped hardworking parents with a universal child care benefit.
Help Canadian families shoulder the responsibilities that they want to shoulder.
I say families now deserve a break.
Well, as you can hear, the leaders of Canada's three major national political parties are courting the family. Conservative leader Stephen Harper has pledged to allow income splitting for couples with children under the age of 18 in order for them to save on income tax. Liberal leader Michael Ignatieff has pledged $1 billion to help families pay for post-secondary education. NDP leader Jack Layton has promised to put a cap on credit card interest rates to make it easier for families to manage their debt. As each tries to attract the attention and the votes of those in the so-called typical Canadian family, we're looking at their strategies through the prism of our project Shift on Demographic Change. Who are the politicians appealing to? Is there a typical family? To help us answer that, I'm joined by Susan McDaniel. She is the Prentice Research Chair in Global Population and Economy at the University of Lethbridge in Lethbridge, Alberta. Good morning.
Good morning, Anna Maria.
Is there such a thing as a typical Canadian family?
Well, in one word, no. Canadian families are highly diverse, and certainly the 1950s family, the image of it, which didn't exist even in the 50s, is now no longer existent.
So how are families changing in this country? What are you seeing?
Well, one of the biggest changes is the fact that more women who are in families, whether in common law unions or married, are working. And in fact, there's no difference now between women who are married and women who are single in terms of participation in the labor force. And by single, I mean divorced, separated, widowed, all the categories of living solo. And the biggest change has been in mothers. Mothers with children under the age of 16 still in the home. Approximately 73% of those are in the paid labor force. And with among mothers with children under three, 66% are in the paid labor force. So most families are working families.
And how much of a change is that over the last couple of decades that men,
well,
women with young children are in the workforce?
Sorry, it's been very significant. In 1976, for example, it was about a quarter. I'm just rounding the numbers up. So it's very significant for young children to have mothers in the workforce.
And are you seeing any other trends with Canadian families?
Oh, yes, huge trends. I mean, everyone knows that the divorce rate leads to more single people, more repartnering, more step-parents, significantly more common law unions, large numbers of unattached people, both young and old, living alone. So even though they might have families, their household is one person. One significant thing recently is the deteriorating economic situation of recent immigrant families, which is a concern. Then, of course, there are large numbers of women now who are primary earners in families or earning more than their husbands because of the recession and how hard that hit primarily blue-collar industries or single-resource towns where women could get jobs and services, but men are being laid off or having reduced hours.
Okay, well, that's really an interesting look then at what a family is, because a family is pretty well everything. Susan McDaniel, there are two other people waiting to join this conversation. Dave Quist is the executive director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. He is in Ottawa. Kathleen Leahy is a professor of law at Queen's University. She is in Kingston, Ontario. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hello.
Kathleen Leahy, given what Susan McDaniel has just said, what do you think of the economic plans being put forward by the different political parties? Which families are they speaking to?
I would say that, first of all, the Liberal plan, so far as we've seen it to this point, is definitely taking an aim at the diverse range of families because the focus is on the children who might be able to go to university. So I think that it would be described as an inclusive and egalitarian, fair approach. The approach that has been suggested so far by the NDP I think, really doesn't represent their entire platform, but certainly doing something to get debt loads under control would be a very important development for low-income and middle-income households particularly. But the approach that I think deserves the most scrutiny and about which Canadians should become hopefully quite conversant is the conservative proposal for income splitting. Now, this is a special project of the Institute for Marriage and the Family, from which Mr. Quist comes. And I think that it should be clearly understood that of all of the proposals, this is the one least likely to be of assistance to existing families in their diverse form, because it will give the very largest benefits to the highest income couples, the ones that most resemble 1950s images of the family. And it will give nothing to what I think would be described as demographically the median or the typical household. So
I would rate that very low. Dave Quist is with us. So, Mr. Quist, your institute did pitch the income splitting plan to the Conservative Party. Why do you think that is a plan that is good for Canadians?
Well, good morning and thank you. We've been working on the family income splitting proposal for 5 years now. And it's not just been us. It's also been working with Dr. Jack Mintz at the University of Calgary, one of Canada's foremost authorities in Canadian tax policy. We've looked at the numbers and the numbers that Jack crunched for us, and actually I'd have to disagree with Professor Leahy's comments there, that there are benefits to all different demographic groups within the family orientation that would have benefits economically. The progressive tax system that we have right now is not completely fair. Those that earn more pay more, and there's benefits to that within society. What we do know is that a single earner family right now pays proportionally more than a dual income family with the same household income. When people go to the bank or financial institution to look at a loan for a car or a line of credit or whatever it may be, household income is looked at. And so when we looked at numbers 4 years ago that showed two families each earning $70,000 a year, the family that had a single earner family was actually paying about $3,800 more per year than a dual income family earning the same household income. So there is a disparity, and the family income proposal by the Conservatives will at least attempt to make that more balanced and more fair.
I'd like you to take a listen to an opinion on this from Tim Wilson. He is a single gay father in Toronto who has a 7-year-old son. This is what he has to say about the income splitting proposal.
Income splitting is just not available because I'm single, so there's no benefit to me. Plus the fact it was a promise, it was potentially 5 years down the road, and that's a promise written in sand as far as I'm concerned. I mean, in the States they have mortgage deductibility. I know it's an expensive program, but that would benefit a whole lot of people that are probably in my situation. You know, a single parent with mortgage and, you know, all these payments.
Dave Quist, what do you make of what Tim Wilson is saying, that families like his are not considered in that equation?
Well, actually, one of the proposals that we've made is that that was not included with the Conservative plan is that for single-parent families such as Tim, that the oldest child actually be considered equivalent to spouse, and therefore the income could be split across those two people. And so that's the research that we had proposed to Conservatives, a member of Parliament across all parties, actually, to consider. So
did you put a cap on the idea that you can only income split if your kids are under the age of 18, have children, and if they're under the age of 18?
Actually, no, we did not. We put a proposal that family income splitting should equate to all families. We saw that already with pension splitting, and we were very supportive of that 4 years ago and said that's a good first step.
Kathleen Leahy, what do you think?
I think that, first of all, it's really important to remember that people and couples are human beings and not abstract numbers. Anyone who has lived in a family knows that two people earning $35,000 each and trying to raise a child have a completely different lifestyle from a household in which there's a single income earner earning $70,000 a year and the other spouse or partner is free to work in the home, perhaps performing child care, volunteer service, whatever. Qualitatively, the $35,000 income earning couple does not have the personal capacity to perform the full range of unpaid services that a non-employed person would perform. And so there's already a huge economic disparity between the two households, which in fact economically favors the single income household already because that value is not brought into the tax base. So functionally, the argument that we want to put these two types of households on an equal footing is really an argument that we still want to turn apples into oranges. They are not comparable. And when you go on and look more deeply into the numbers that Jack Mintz crunched for the IMF, you find that really the whole motivation here is to create a tax system that will allow women to, quote, choose to withdraw from paid work and to choose to spend their time performing unpaid work in the home.
I have another clip now that I'd like everyone to comment on. Judy Nagy is working part-time from home. She is the mother of a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old just outside of Montreal. This is what she says about what would help a family such as hers.
Well, I would like to see more support for families, and in particular women who are self-employed or work from home, because generally these women make this choice as an alternative to daycare because there are not enough daycare spots available, or they basically don't want to work 9 to 5 while raising their kids. It's a very difficult thing to do. So I'd like to see some kind of support for women or men who choose to work from home or to find alternatives to institutionalized daycare.
Kathleen Leahy, what do you think?
I think that that really comes very close to getting to the real point here, which is that women who do work in the home are completely isolated from current fiscal and economic structures associated with modern society. If they work in the home, they do not accrue Canada Pension Plan credits nor employment insurance credits. They cannot develop their own pension plan. They're essentially at the mercy of an unpaid sector of the economy. And I would agree that it would be very important to try to find a way to create more equality in that particular direction. This is a very dangerous area for women to move into.
Susan McDaniel, to what extent do you think the leaders also need to be appealing to that so-called sandwich generation, those who have young children, those who have aging parents, whether they're in the home with them or not?
Well, that's an extremely important question, and some of my research looks at that. In fact, what's happening in the current economic difficulties, particularly among immigrant families, but also among other Canadians, is that they're huddling together in families, and that means families of multiple generations. Now, so that means sometimes that it's not the older generation that needs the care. It's the older generation sometimes that's providing the care, the daycare, as Kathleen was saying, to the child. Childcare to the children in the family, so that mother and father can both go out to work, and that kind of family generational living or generational sharing of responsibilities for children is not recognized at all in policy, including immigration policy.
Dave Edquist, are you hearing anything aimed at those families?
I'm not at this time, and it is something that is very important. Professor McDaniel has hit on a very important issue, and that is that we're also becoming an aging society, and so our seniors, our elder parents, are going to be needing more and more care. We also know that they tend to fare better when they're being cared for in their home or in their children's home, extended family's home, if at all possible. And on the child care side of that equation that was also mentioned, that's also very true, that our research has shown that if possible, parents would prefer to raise their own children. If that's not possible for economic reasons and so on, they prefer to have an extended family member taking care of it and so on down the line. So,
but people do raise their own children, whether they have them in child care or not, right?
They're still raising them, but they prefer to stay at home to raise them if possible. But if that's not possible for economic reasons, then they prefer to have a family member raise them if at all possible. So the national child care program idea is not a proposal that we're in favor of. One size does not fit all.
I have another clip. This is Jennifer Myron. She is a single mother. She has 4.5-year-old triplets, and she lives in St. John's, Newfoundland. Listen to her.
I want them to make it easier for single parents and low-income families to be able to afford life insurance and health insurance. I'm a contract worker with my government, and they don't provide benefits for contract workers. And the cost would have been $192 a month. And as far as life insurance is concerned, I'm probably going to end up spending $100 a month to cover my children in the case anything should ever happen to me. A huge amount of my income goes to paying for my daycare and paying rent and groceries and paying for health insurance that I'm not provided with. What does that do for the working poor like myself? Nothing.
Okay, Kathleen Leahy, how well are parties addressing the needs of a family like Jennifer Myron, single mom, 4.5-year-old triplets?
Right. The income splitting plan would completely leave every person in that category out of the picture. And because the income splitting proposal was not raised in a budgetary context, we have really no idea what the actual legal details would look like. So for the situation of someone like Jennifer, I think it really brings into focus the problems with sort of family economic policy as it has developed today. Every policy has focused really on two-parent families, on privatizing child care, on privatizing so many of the expenses that should be shared by society at large to make sure that human reproduction can happen in a constructive way. And so I would say that everything from child care resources to additional funding to support a family like that to some of the benefits that she is requiring could be addressed by more equality in labor market policies and better funding aimed at the people who really need it the most. And that truly is single working parents who have children. They have the highest rate of poverty of all Canadian families.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but I do want to get into yesterday, Michael Ignatieff proposed a plan for the Liberals to help students in post-secondary education, $1,000 a year in tax-free, non-repayable help for 4 years to high school students to pay for college or university tuition, bumped to $1,500 a year for low-income students. Kathleen Leahy, briefly, did it go far enough?
It definitely is a good start. It could go a lot further. High tuitions are having a clear impact on the class composition of who is going to university these days.
And Susan McDaniel, from where you sit, how practical a plan is that one?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, the issue of what are called continuers or dropouts is a huge issue in Canada. And so if we can encourage in a knowledge economy and society more people to get a post-secondary education, I think that would be good. But the first issue to address is the huge high school dropout rate, particularly among boys.
Okay, so given all the changing demographics in this country, briefly, Dave Quist, what would you like to see the parties talking about?
Well, I'm pleased that they're actually talking about family policy in general right now. As we can tell from this discussion today, there are a lot of different variables there that affect very different families in different ways. This is the first federal election that I recall in many years where we're actually looking at all these different many of the different pieces, and I hope that conversation will continue into the future as well during the campaign.
Okay, Susan McDaniel, what about you?
Well, I think it's important to talk about families. At the same time, it's important to talk realistically about families. And some of the current policies are built on myths. For example, the evidence does not suggest a preference for care at home for elders or for children. The evidence is strongly in favor of early childhood education, quality child care, and professional care for elders when they need it. But most elders don't need care. They're providing care, and they're providing often the higher tuitions for the grandchildren to go to university.
Okay, so we have to leave it there, but all good points, and we will keep on talking. So thank you all. Susan McDaniel, Prentice Research Chair in Global Population and Economy at the University of Lethbridge. Kathleen Leahy, Law Professor at Queen's University. Dave Quist, Executive Director of the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. If you have thoughts on this, call us, write to us, go to our website, cbc.ca/thecurrent, and click on the Contact Us link. Or call us toll-free. The number is 1-877-287-7366. Tell us what you think about the family as this election campaign continues. This is The Current.